For some of you, it's your first time. For others, it is not. But for today, I would like to welcome you all to Epic Realms.
Friends and enemies, heroes and villains, welcome to Epic Realms. Today's guest has books in many genres. If you like a type of fiction, chances are he has a series for you. Please welcome the one and only Christopher D. Schmitz to Epic Realms. How are you doing?
I'm well.
You know, I first met you at a local convention here, and you seem to go, you're all over at conventions. You're on all the convention scenes. And that's kind of how I met you. I ran across you one day walking by, and you were promoting Decker's Dozens. And you were like, hey, check out this book. And he was like, cool. And I told you, I said, I don't really get a time to read anymore. And you're like, well, do you do audiobooks? I go, yes. He's like, yeah, you were like, here's the link, all the stuff, Audible, everything. And then I looked and I just went down the rabbit hole. And I was like, this guy's got something in damn near every genre, like everything. You have something, you have a fantasy, high fantasy, you know, sci-fi, space. It wasn't something that I usually expect from authors. There are a couple that are like, I do this fiction and then I dabble in this other one. But you're like, I do it all.
I think I've got between 9 and 12 series that I write. It's a lot. Like I've got, I think, two high fantasies, an epic fantasy, an urban fantasy. I got a nonfiction series. I've got two sci-fi series, one space opera, one's mil SF. I've got my funny detective series. I've got a horror series. I've got,
Just the fiction. That's just the fiction.
Yeah. 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 I think I got two nonfiction series. One's on art, like author and publishing craft and just how to do things well. I do a lot of like author mentoring, what do you call it? Book doctoring. Even like over the weekend, I was talking to a guy, I'm like, would you like some feedback? I don't want to give you unsolicited advice, but like I was just standing there looking at his stuff. I'm like, I told him your table looks great. What I didn't say was your book's not so much. Like and then as we're talking through, I'm just slowly wading in because give it all to me. I want to know. I want if I can improve, I'd love to. And like pulled open his book. I'm like, well, your text isn't justified. And you see all this inch and a half of white space on this side. That's supposed to be in the middle. You did your gutter margin backward. You must have forgot when you did it that it starts on an odd page. So if you forget to do it that way, like, because when you're looking at a page view, you got page,
yeah,
it's backwards though if you format visually. And I don't know what he did, but he's looking at it, he goes, you're right, he's got a lot of books out, he just never looked at his own product that way. I'm like, gotta look at it through the lens of your reader, you know?
Right. Yeah. And have other people look at it too, right? Have,
yeah,
other,
yeah,
people take a look at it and whatnot. That's what editors are for and stuff as well, so yeah. For sure.
The best person to look at your book and give you critical feedback and make you hate yourself is your best friend's girlfriend. She probably doesn't like you as much as she says she does. And if you give her a chance to unload on you, she probably will.
Oh, I like that. So tell us a bit about yourself as a youth growing up. Were you awesome in school? You know, really good at all of your homework, you know, a master at literature and English and third grade, or was not so much?
I always loved to write. I always loved stories, and for me, writing was a way to do that. I grew up, Stranger Things was my childhood. Like I grew up in the 80s in a, you know, in a rural part of Minnesota. Taxes. I hate taxes. So a little local city. So I serve on a local city board here. I'm down in Waterloo, Iowa. And they decide, of course, hey, we want to do a thing for the city. We want everybody in town to have this thing. This was in the 80s, like, hey, the new big thing, cable television. We're all going to have this great new advent in like multimedia entertainment. So here's this like citywide tax. Everybody gets to pay half a percent or a percentage point, whatever it is for, they call it, I think, a local option sales tax. And so everybody's paying that. We're going to give everybody cable, except for there's this giant field. My house is the last house on within city limits, kind of out in the on the boondocks. And there's all this field out there, like, schmitzes. That's gonna cost too much to trench and run the cable out there. So we did not get that. So everybody had television. I had 20 acres of woods, and I probably had the better deal. So I got to, you know, I just went out and let my imagination play, and because I didn't have TV. You know, I had four channels. I had like the two boring channels, PBS, also boring, and this fun one that looked like white snow just all the time. The snow channel, that was great. So I read a lot of books. I don't think my librarian was trying to inspire me when she's like, you can't read those books. You're too young for those. I think she just was a horrible human. Cause why would you do that to kids instead of encourage them? But, right. I was the right personality where I said, I'll show you, you know? So I'm reading, you know, Tolkien and all kinds of great stuff in like third grade. I was reading a lot of, golden silver age science fiction stuff. H.G. Wells, trying to blank on his name. He wrote John Wyndham. Like a lot of these guys are kind of obscure, but honestly, they were library discards. They were throwing them out anyway because nobody else wanted to read this stuff. And I'm just picking them up and reading them. I'm reading unabridged classics, and just because they were cheap, you know, they're basically just being thrown away. I'm like, well, I don't have any TV and it looks interesting, so I guess I'll read it. And so I had a very broad base in reading even at a young age.
Do you think that that helped you when you're coming through going like, I'm going to switch genres and write a book in this genre and write a book in that genre because you've read so many different ones as
maybe
a youth?
I think I'm just interested in so many things. I love all kinds of stories. I would make a lot more money and have a lot more success if I drilled in on a genre. It'd be way easier when people are walking by my booth to go, hey, do you love science fiction with, you know, giant explosions in space and, you know, like high stakes? Like, oh, yeah, okay. And then you pull them over and you sell them the thing. Now, I mean, I have so many books and I have so many series. I'm like having to drill down and find out, well, what kind of books do you like? I have something for you. You're probably going to like it all. If you're here at Comic-Con, you're probably a nerd, so you'll probably like anything I got here. But what's the book I can sell you today? And that's right. the real question I'm asking.
Yeah. And the thing is, when you go to a convention and you see all the people at the convention booths, you can pick out the people that really enjoy what they're doing. Because there's the people that are doing this, and they're just looking down. They're not paying attention to who's at their booth. If somebody walks up, they wait until they say something that completely, or there's you who everybody who walks by, you're like, hey, do you, you know, you're engaging with them. You're talking to them with everybody. Every time I come by a booth that you're at, if I want to stop and say hi, I literally am waiting because you're interacting with somebody else. And while I'm there just to chat with you, like you're always interactive. You're always pulling people in. And I think that's a great way to do these conventions. Cause like I said, there's so many people that just sit there with their heads down, not looking at the audience, yeah. Interacting.
I wrote a book because my wife told me, she's like, you got all this great advice and you're always helping other authors. She looks at me and goes, you got to stop giving this stuff away. So I wrote a book called Sell More Books at Live Events, which is how to sell more books at live events. Because you got to, nonfiction is different. Don't get a clever name. Just tell people what your book does. And that's probably your best title. And, I was on I'm a member of a lot of different author groups, and a lot of them being sales related, or will often other authors will ask questions like, hey, I'm doing a convention. What should I do? And many of these groups have just such bad advice I play a little game, which is how long until I get kicked out, by giving the best possible advice in just the bluntest way possible. So I'm like, listen, we're professionals here. This is a should be a professional group. We're not sparing your feelings. If it's a critique, obviously I'm not going to be a dick about it, but like, don't listen to people with terrible advice that are untested in the market. So this guy goes, hey, I'm about to do my first convention. I'm so nervous. I don't know what to do. And this guy goes, well, here's what you should do, how you should run your table. If you want to look like a real author, you should sit in the back and just write while you're there. I'm like, that's a great way to lose money. I said, do not listen to any advice this person gives you. They're an idiot and should probably not even be in this site if they're giving you that kind of information. I don't know if they're trying to directly harm you in your career, but that is the worst possible way you can have success.
Right.
What people do at the convention, what we offer, and this is something you can't get from a traditional publisher. You can't get that one-on-one interaction. So I go to these shows all the time, and people are standing in line for like 6 hours to get autographs for not even A-list celebrities, but people that were very near and dear to them, the people love. I would never stand in line for a celebrity. I do a lot of small shows and bump into them randomly and get to have fun chats because they're like, there's only 1,000 people at this show and nobody's in line. Good. Line's already gone, you know, so you get to kind of bump into them. But if you're ignoring those people, like they're not going to stand. They didn't come to the show for you. There's nobody standing in line for you. Don't treat them as if they are. You have to introduce yourself to them. And so now I do have, like when I was doing shows for the first couple of years, nobody came to the show looking for me until people started realizing, oh, this guy, he's writing like a book a year in my series. I'm going to go back and get the next one every year. And I built a bit of a customer base that way. And I'm like, you can't rely on people recognizing you for this great thing, even if you are, because you're a nobody yet. Yeah. Maybe you'll be somebody great later, but don't treat your fan base. Cause the thing that we offer fans as independent authors versus big name signed people, like if you want to get up and talk to Stephen King, you can get in a line if he's at a literary event. Cause I know he does those.
Yeah.
And you can wait in line and you can get 30 seconds with him and a little photo op. And it's going to cost you like $50 or $60 and he'll sign it for you.
Yeah.
And then you got a signed book and that's awesome. But what you get from the independent authors at these shows is you show up and you have to actually like ask them questions. And I mean, obviously, you know, you always see I've got a big crowd that will sometimes form around me. And they give people as much time as they can, depending on how much booth help I have. But I do like a lot of panels and things like that. And I mm-hmm. love to interact with fans because that's what I have to offer is not just a book, but a little piece of me too.
How did you get into the book sphere, you know, writing stories, you're reading a lot of stories. Was it just like do some short stories and like, oh, I'm going to try and publish a novel and then kind of see how this works? Was there somebody that just walked you through the steps?
No, I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. I loved Star Wars. That was probably my, of all the IPs that I'm a fan of, that was my biggest one as a teenager. Now, there's a lot of Star Wars stuff I haven't even seen. And that's fine. It's kind of evolved beyond maybe where I am as a fan in many terms, but I had read up until a certain point, every Star Wars novel, you know, like, even the kid stuff, like the, it was Jedi Academy, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite two authors out of that group, be Kevin J. Anderson and his wife, Rebecca, and Timothy Zahn. I've done shows with all of those guys. I went out to supper several months back, actually, with Kevin and Rebecca. He's got a lot of great, whenever I have something big industry related that I've got a question on, I reach out to him, and ask him, Timothy was great. He had to tell me to calm down. Like I was sitting next to him, like I got people right next to one of my favorite sci-fi authors, and he's like, "Sit down. It's all right." He's kind of edging away nervously, you know. But I've seen him at a few other shows too. But so I wanted to write Star Wars, And I didn't know how to write a Star Wars novel. I didn't know how to write a novel at that point. I had written a lot of, you know, things that were short stories, but I always remember being part of a a creative writing class in like my senior year in high school. And I had a really good, teacher who was very interested in, you know, encouraging students. A couple of, actually probably my favorite two teachers were both the English teachers. And we had to write a, you know, the final project was to write a short story, and some kid yelled out, "Oh, great, Schmitz is going to write like 30 pages. And I did, you know, it's like everyone else is groaning and I'll get right 5 pages. I'm like, double space. Come on, guys. That's like, you can't even tell a story of that. Everybody else is groaning and complaining, knowing I was going to wreck the curve. So that was kind of fun. But so in the early aughts and the late 90s, when I was in college and was actually writing, you could actually get information from places. Like, I tried to contact Amazon today. They shipped me a bunch of books that were damaged. Used to be great customer service. I could just reach out and go, "Hey, here's pictures," because it's got the, like, a little serial number and everything in the back page. They could scan and prove that I'm not scamming them. And then they just refund me, and I could drop those copies at a little free library or donate them to a Goodwill or whatever. And now I can't even get that. But back then, you could actually, they actually had a phone number on how to reach Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
So on their website. So one day I was at work, nobody around, like it had been dead forever. I was just working at this little job at a mall and minding the store. I'm like, well, I'm gonna call these guys and just find out what it takes. And they gave me a lot of great advice. They're like, "Yeah, we actually call people. We don't like just take blind submissions." So I started learning about how the submission system works and how to send a query letter, how to write those things. And they said that the best thing you can do is get famous for writing something that we would read as sci-fi and fantasy fans first. So I'm like, well, I've got a lot of ideas. And so I wrote a high fantasy series that did get published through a traditional publisher who aren't around anymore. So I guess good luck finding it. I don't even have copies of those old books. That's all right. They probably weren't that good anyway. I do still have them, actually, a revised edition that are published. And in my way deep in my backlog, I don't usually bring them to shows because they don't sell like everything else does.
Right.
I've moved into a far different sphere, maybe as a writer. But that's kind of how I got my start. I wanted to write something that I loved, and now I write stuff that I love. And I'm like, but it's not a part of necessarily an IP. I'm writing stuff that, like, I'm going back. I'm like, yeah, this is, who is this guy? That wasn't me, I don't think, but apparently it was.
Do you feel like that you have evolved as a writer then? You know, you say it's not necessarily the same person, but.
I grew gills yesterday. Like, evolution is strong in me. I've definitely evolved as a writer. Like my first draft versus, you know, getting that in shape to being a good product later on. You know, it's only a few drafts versus some of my early stuff was. So I often share this when I'm coaching and mentoring other authors on why I think people ought to not be a pantser, which is people who write by the seat of their pants, don't know where they're going. I'm like, I outline everything now. When I started, I was a pantser. It took me probably 3 years to get novel one written. I wrote the third book in my nerdy detective series in 14 days. And it just, I you got to know how it ends before you start, and then focus your time and your energy. Sit down and you can be an author if you want, but if you don't write, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
So you got to find your time to do it. You got to know where you're going. And then you got to protect yourself. Like, so you can, like, you got to tell everybody else, "Hey, don't interrupt me." You got to uninstall Facebook or whatever you got to do to make sure that you can focus and then get her done.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel that in doing so and learning that process, you can look back and be like, here's a point, here's a moment a thing that I learned or a thing that I changed that really was a big deal, like going from being a pantser to writing an outline? Like, did you definitively immediately after you wrote that first outline and the next book afterwards went, wow, this is a completely different animal? Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Like it was a game changer. Little things, finding pieces of software that help for me. I don't really, and you can maybe tell us just by how I've answered some questions, I'm not really always linear in my thinking and speaking. I'll start answering a question, then I'm in the middle of a story, and then I've looped back to a second story, and then I'm at the point. Like, I use Scrivener to do most of my writing, which is not just a blank page. It's really easy for how I do really rough outlines, because my outlines would get a failing grade from a high school English teacher. yeah, but it works. So I plot out with a rough outline kind of where things are going. And a lot of times I'll change them based on how the story is evolving as I'm writing it, where the characters will sometimes surprise you and will try and maybe take control a little bit based on their, because most of the characters I write are kind of roguish in many ways. And so I'll have to make some of those tweaks and revisions as I'm going. And with Scrivener, you can just grab the whole in its note card mode and just drag it into a different order. And I like the way it does its layouts and things.
Yeah, I know a handful of authors that use that and have highly suggested that process and said, oh my God, it's way better than a Word document or whatever else they were using.
You mentioned Word is great for many things, but it's not conducive unless you're a very linear writer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know exactly what every step is from here to there. And I'll be walking through my house and I don't know what I'm doing. So it's just not great for me, because I was always having to go back, scroll through, find things, highlighting, copying and pasting big chunks, moving them around.
Yeah.
And so I would have a second Word document open with that outline, so I knew kind of where I was and could navigate it. And Scrivener does that, where it's got a whole extra little side panel that can show you your format, your whole structure, kind of in a tree format. So I can just drag those where I want them.
Awesome. You mentioned helping other authors and kind of giving advice, doing seminars, things like that. What do you think is the number one thing that new writers and new authors ask you, besides how do I become famous or how do I, you know, whatever? What do you think is some of the bigger issues that they run across just starting off that you're like easily able to take care of and help them with?
I've got two pieces that I never change as my biggest pieces. I've got probably about half a dozen things where I'm like, you need this and you need it now. But the top two pieces of advice I always give are stop writing your magnum opus, because I know you're doing it right now. Stop it, push pause, come back to it when you're ready. You're not ready. You're not ready to run in the Olympics because you just barely squeaked onto the junior high, team. So push pause on it until you're ready. And what I want you to do, write a lot of short fiction, because you're going to need to know how to do the editing. Like it took me 3.5 years to write my first novel. And that was just to get to the end. And then I got to the end and I'm like going through and I'm like, I need to fix this. And now I'm learning. I'm like, where did I first introduce this character? I know about halfway through the book, and this reads like an introduction scene, because I'm describing certain things. I think I introduced him back in like chapter 3. So why am I introducing things to him now? So you learn how to do the flow, and then how to like do the revisions, but then you learn how to start. You learn how to stop. You learn how to fill in the middle with a format where you're doing like a hero's journey, or whether you're doing, you know, the classic, three point structure, or plotting out your arcs and things like that, that you don't really need to know what those are, but we do those intrinsically because that's how we consume stories. So we can generally feel when we have something that's off. If you outline those first, you can kind of get a better sense of those. But if you write them in a short format, you can write a short story in a month, and you can, within the next month, you can edit all of that. And then you'll have something, you'll have something else to sell. You'll be able to, and when I'm coaching people, I tell them, write me 5 short stories between 5,000 and 10,000 words. And then after they're done with that, and we've kind of worked through some of those processes so that they have learned some of the editing things, I tell them, now write me 5 stories, 1,000 words or less. It's going to be harder because it's, you got to now learn, what can I leave out?
Yeah.
Cause now you have to do, it's a classic thing that we always say as authors, you got to kill your darlings. I wrote this great sentence. It hurts to take it out. I heard a great piece of advice from a literary agent once. If you have this one amazing sentence in your book and your book is a good story, but it's mediocre writing, kill the great sentence. Because you don't want it to stand out so sharply, because that will tell all your readers, this guy is a great writer, he just didn't do it for this book. So it's going to drag the whole book down by having a shining moment in it.
Yeah.
So write those, because then at the end, you can compile that into one anthology collection and dabble with a few genres. And then when you release your magnum opus science fiction, you're like, hey, do you like political sci-fi with, you know, with characters that are like this? Like, they're like, not really. I only read Westerns. Like, well, I wrote this thing that's kind of follows these Western tropes in this little anthology. Yeah, let me look at that. So you have a second thing on your table if tables are going to be, you know, a part of your thing. So that's just the first piece. And the second piece is, now you have a short story. Pick one of those to introduce your writing to a reader and start a newsletter. I wish I would have started and kept my newsletter going when I initially had written. You need to, as an indie, connect people to your writing and connect those people then to you, because that's what you offer above being a part of J.K. Rowling's, you know, reader list.
Right.
You're just a buyer over there. Who's is it? Penguin Random House, maybe, I think owns her stuff. I'm one of the big 5, probably Hatchet, because it's a British company. But you're just a couple of dollars to those guys,
right?
To an indie, like, I've written whole books because I've had a couple of fans go, man, I really wish we had some, like, another book in this series. I'm like, well, I guess that's what I'm writing next then.
Yeah.
Like, you really have an outsized impact on the lifestyle, on the writings, and the attitude and the outlook of an independent author by getting involved with one of them, by coming and seeing them at a show, by responding to their emails on their newsletter. So that having that thing to give them for free to get on your newsletter will start to build that base, which will, one, encourage you. It allows you then to sell things, to start strong, to find an advanced review team. There's so many reasons to do it. It's the number one thing marketing wise that I think people can do with their careers. And too many people are like, well, but I'm on Facebook. Well, how many people see your posts?
Right.
You know, if you've got 10,000 people on Facebook, that's great. But if you want them to see it, you have to now pay Facebook. Yeah. You don't have to pay your newsletter. You've subscribed. I mean, you pay a subscription to have that as a host, but then you own that. Like, Facebook owns your subscriber list. You don't own it, and you have to pay them if you want to actually talk with them. So, and that's all things. There's a book out there. I tell people there are 2 books you need. One is mine, because I'm here to make money. And 2, it's a book called Newsletter Ninja by Tammy Labreck. It's a little outdated now, just with tech has changed.
Right.
But like, this was the thing that I followed. I'm looking at a copy of it right now. It's sitting over my book of my shelf of very important books on marketing stuff. I'm sitting in my author cave at the moment.
Well, there's still so many things that, you know, while technology has changed, the way things are have changed. People consuming books, they still consume books. And so a lot of that stuff, I'm sure, is still very valid. You know, while it's maybe not the same exactly, you know, social media is still social media, and the way people consume is still the way people consume. And, you know, getting people interested in something, you just got to get it in their hands, you know, in their eyes, in their hand, let them, make them see it.
Well, and not every story is a book. You know, some people might be, maybe you launch audiobook first. Yeah. Maybe your story is a comic. Maybe it's a video game. Maybe it's a tabletop game. Maybe you're writing an RPG module. I did in some of my freelance services that I work with, I just over a year ago, had a guy ask if I'd do a developmental edit for him, which is, that's not the make the grammar work perfect. That's a, does this work as a story? Do I need to move things around? Is my theme like focused? And I looked at him, I told him at the end of it, I'm like, I did not think I was going to like your book. I thought I was doing this on a work for hire basis. This was fantastic. I loved every bit of this. It might not be a book. I feel like this is a series of podcasts. This is a series of radio spots. You should be talking to maybe your local outlets, your local talk radio. And it was like, I think it was like 300,000 words, like he had three massive volumes and I did the first two for him. And I'm like, this was so good, but you need to structure this a certain way to be how we consume the story.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. How do you advise people and how do you yourself go about things like the Amazon market? Because if you look on there and you're just looking at, here's new indie books and you got 5,000 books with zero reads, zero reviews that have been sitting there for 3 years. And then you try to put it in there with this flooded market of all these people who are authors, but really not really authors. How do you fight that? How do you make yourself seen on that kind of a list?
Can you tell me?
Well, I'm asking you what you do, what your strategy is, what your plan is. If you're helping these other authors out, what is your suggestion to them?
I tell people that I lean into my strengths. One of my strengths is doing a lot of live sales and events. So I decided to hit it in such a way that I've activated my reader base. So I built a network of super fans of people that follow me, that like my stuff. And I'm actively growing that in a lot of ways. I do sell books on Amazon. I've been lately trying to steer them to other platforms.
Okay.
I know you'd mentioned you saw my website. I've got that new sales portal. That's the one with the big banner says I write books nerds like. But I'm the big trend right now, because I also try and be on topic with author yeah. trends, is to what we call direct sales. Own your sales portal. So if what's an Audible credit? If you have an Audible membership for an audiobook, I make like a couple of bucks. Like out of the 16, I get such few monies that it's almost embarrassing. And Jeff Bezos should be embarrassed. Like it's abusive. Brandon Sanderson said, you know, I'm not going to go on Audible. He just said no, and that really empowered a lot of authors to say, yeah. You know, you can say no. There are other places. And so like all of my audiobooks and stuff, they come through BookFunnel, which is an independent distribution service. And the authors get to keep all the money. Cause like for me, I hired my audio narrator on A Kiss of Daggers and the prequel and Will on the next one. Like I paid all of those people to do the work. So I own the rights. Why am I going to give like so much of the money to somebody else to distribute it? Yeah, they've got the customers, but you can go and find those customers.
Right.
And that's the whole thing with Amazon is they release, what is it? It's like 1,000 books a minute. Like and you can actually look up the number. It's crazy high.
It is.
And that's why you can't get the traction. You get drowned out in a flood of spewing sewage that comes out, whether it's just, you know, just info dumped stuff for people who are click farming and stealing right. from the Kindle Unlimited pool, whether it's just trash that was put together by AI so somebody can make a few bucks. It's not as easy as people think it is, but it's easier if you didn't just invest 6 to 9 months in writing and paying an editor for the thing. It makes it a little less risky.
Right.
So you have to wade through the crap and pierce the noise. So Amazon said, here's a great way. You know, we're going to keep 60%-ish of the money that you would make, plus the cost of the distribution fees, the bandwidth, or the production costs on the, you know, if it's a paperback. So we're going to keep that. And you want to keep, you know, so you've got like that 40%. These are rough numbers because kind of mixing both the ebook and the print numbers. So it's just one number. But so now you get the 40% left, which is great. But if you want people to buy it, so you get the 40% if you want to pay us more money on our advertising service.
Yeah,
we'll gladly take more of your money for us to make money. I'm like, this reminds me of an episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. Where when SpongeBob wants a job and he goes, Mr. Krabs, how much am I going to have to pay you to work for you? And he's like, money? Yes. Yes, please. Only $50 a day you have to pay me to work here. I'm like, it just feels like that's what the Amazon arrangement is.
Yeah.
So I don't do a ton of business on there. And part of that is me being surly because I have read countless books on how to harness the traffic, you know, hit the algorithms. And I know, and I do, when I do release, I generally sell quite a bit and then I taper off real quick and I could do the Kindle Unlimited, but romance authors just dominate so much of the platform with the whale readers who read a book a day and who sometimes also look like whales. It's just, they go through so much of the traffic and command so much of them. Like I'm just going to focus on me and doing what I do well, which is going out, meeting people, sometimes heckling them until they buy a book, and then making a super fan and then moving into other markets and selling them the next thing, the next product that's related, that's adjacent, or the whole next series, or just making them a fan and keeping in touch with me online.
Yeah. The books aren't the only thing you do, right? You do other things. Correct. Like games.
Games.
You should tell us a little bit about your games stuff. Well, you've done.
My wife really wants me to be promoting my OnlyFans page.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just she keeps telling me, she's like, listen, you're not that pretty, but your feet are okay.
Hey,
so
you can do that.
I do a lot of games. So part of this came about, one of the book series that I was a big fan of as a kid was one of the fantasy series that did not get renewed when Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro bought TSR. And for people who don't know what TSR is, it means you're probably just a little younger than me. And TSR,
I'm sure our audience does know, but yeah.
Yes. I explain this a lot, even at conventions. They're like, what's TSR?
Oh,
like,
wow.
TSR was the game company founded by Gary Gygax of GaryCon. He invented Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. Started as a game called Chainmail, which was just a miniature wargaming thing that people wanted more and more in the characters. They were like, what if this character that was like a superhero, and like, how would you give him more powers? And so they started writing more and more rules, and then eventually turned into Dungeons and Dragons. And I know if you're a D&D historian, you'd be like,
about Dave Arneson.
In a nutshell, that's kind of how it worked. Yeah, it was him and a bunch of buddies, including Dave. And there's another one. I forget his name, but he died, I remember. So anyway, I bring that up so I can brag. Last October, I actually played Chainmail in Gary Gygax's basement.
Nice.
Where it was all invented. I got invited out to play bagpipes, actually, at a Lake Geneva event in his honor.
Okay.
So that was kind of fun. But yeah, so this game did not get renewed when WotC bought TSR. They wanted D&D, they had a book series that went along with the game called Dragon Dice. It was a Lester Smith game. Lester Smith worked on a lot of products for them, and him and a bunch of other people. This would have been around the time when I think Arneson was the head guy over there. And anyway, so this was a big collectible game, had a big market for it. It was huge at Gen Con. A gal who I'm friends with was basically running Gen Con around the time and was the one of the people behind all the marketing and the sales push behind TSR's Dragon Dice. So they sold that property to an independent game company made of mostly fans of the game. Who wanted to keep it alive, and they released new products that had been planned for many years. And I approached them. I told them I'd come and help them pitch games. Just kind of somebody who's good at pitch work, and help them do demos and do some pitch work. And then them like at the end of the show, though, because you guys have your annual business meeting, I want to pitch you guys something. And I pitched them a book series. I want to pick up where you guys left off, because at the end of the day, if you don't have something tying people to the mythology, to the characters, you're just chucking a bunch of dice. Same thing with, you know, with Dragonlance and Forgotten Realms. If you didn't have characters that you cared about, yeah, it's cool, but it's just a system for make-believe where you can use some math to make it make sense. And so I pitched them on the idea of that, and we've been running some books for those guys now for a while. And so I've been into the game sphere. And now I've got Now I'm releasing a new game. I was telling you, the Call of Cthulhu. That's going to be Winnie the Pooh is in the public domain now. And so is the most of Lovecraft stuff also public domain. This is going to be a co-op game, real simple. We're trying to keep it as accessible as possible. I've also got Pick Up and Go Games. This year is releasing they're licensing my IP for my 50 Shades of Wharf, the Division of Nerd Crime book series. So that's all like funny murder mystery at a Comic-Con. They got to stop Will Wheaton's murder is kind of the plot of that book. And then someone stole Vin Diesel's like identity at Renfest, and he can't break character in a LARP because he's on this like TV program. And if he does break character, he'll like lose his contract. And then then Games Workshop, who's secretly the British Mafia, will come and break his kneecaps because he owes him a lot for his Warhammer collection because he's bought it all on credit. And so just goofy, funny stuff. We're going to time that, I think, for the release of book number 5, which I just got cover art, rough cover art on today. It's fantastic. But yeah, so moving into that game sphere, the Kickstarter for the next book in that the World of Espa, that those Dragon Dice series, that's dropping in a week from today. And that's going to have a playable 5e module where you can play the same scenario. We're dropping a comic book in addition to two novels, and then the 5e module with that. I'm sorry, I missed that. Two novels. Not I said either novels or modules. No, I don't know which, but two novels, a 5e module, and a comic book. So the 5e playable module is going to follow the comic book, and there's also like 3D printable miniatures, and all the minis like model the characters from the book covers, and it's just a really neat campaign that's been like 9 months in the making, and we're finally ready to drop it.
That's awesome. For those listening, that's going to be next week, the 18th. That Kickstarter will be out there. I'll have the link for that Kickstarter in the show notes if you want to go and check it out. You have so you're going to have all kinds. Are these going to be, let me get my train of thought together, are these going to be add-ons that they can get some of these other things, or are they like stretch goals? Kind of what is the plan for some of those kinds of ideas?
Kind of a combination. There are, I'm not going to reveal all of the things on the stretch goal until we get close to them. There are a couple of the 3D minis that we have planned to be stretch goals, but there is a mini pack for the Cyrian Songs characters and one for the Relic Quest characters. Okay. The Relic Quest characters is kind of my primary group of heroes. The Cyrian Songs is another group of heroes. They're in another part of the world at the same time. And those two, if you read the books like every other, you will see that what one group does, the other group is kind of hearing about. And the book that we're primarily releasing is called Draco War. In Draco War, both of those groups finally meet up together. So it spans across from the one continent up into the other continent, and then kind of goes they have to travel then to the third continent that's kind of in between and is in the some of the Tales of the First Age books. So it's a big world, and one of the things we'll do, I can tell you, the first stretch goal is going to be a printed high color map so people can have a physical edition of this. So we're doing that. The add-ons, any of the books you can get as an add-on. So we have digital, and we also have physical. So let's say you're in Australia. I know we got a pretty big reader base for that series in Australia. And you're like, I don't want to pay for shipping. I just kind of want the minis and the module. You can back that. And you can add on the minis as a digital thing if you want to 3D print your own ones. Or you can buy them as a physical one of that tier. And you could add on different books and or the comics. So any of the stuff that I'm in charge of doing, which is the books. I do also have the Dragon Dice game. I just have, as far as an add-on, if you want to buy a two-player starter set on it, I do have that in there as well if you want to give that a try. But otherwise, you can go to DragonDice.com and check that out. And they'll sell you all of the different factions, and there's like 16 different playable species. It's a pretty big, well-developed world.
Nice. Awesome. Going back to your books, we talked about all the different genres that you work in and that you've done throughout time. do you find that there is one that you, and I'm not asking you for, you know, what is your favorite child, but kind of what is one that seems to be easiest for you to just kind of sit back and just, this is a genre and it's just second nature for you to do that genre as opposed to some of the other ones?
I do get it a lot. People ask me. The one that I would always say is my favorite is the one I'm writing now. I will say that my newer fantasy series is really, it's just clicking on all levels. And it reads like John Wick versus elves. It's like a human trapped in the land of the Fae. He's this human assassin who was trained by the Unseelie Court. He's got to go out and defend this girl. And as he's doing that, he gets embroiled in a series of duels with her future betrothed, who's just a terrible person, and he can't let anybody know he's a human, or everybody will turn against him. So he's always wearing like a bandana or something, making an excuse for who he is. And that is just kicking every other butt's book in sales. That was my last Kickstarter. It launched strong and it's just picking up more speed. I sold out of it. I brought way more copies than I thought I was going to need to Kansas City. And I sold out and was having to take down addresses and I had to mail off a whole bunch of books today, just getting back from my latest Comic-Con. So that's been great, mainly because the fan response has been so strong.
Yeah.
But I also really love, probably the easiest one to write is my comedy series, because I'm just sitting down and just telling myself jokes all day long. And yeah. It's easy. That's, so I mentioned that book three took me like 14 days to write. I'm going to admit that I actually pantsed that one. I haven't pantsed a book in a long time. I did know what the ending was. And I knew like five plot points, but I'm like, I'm going to kind of figure this one out and then I'll write an outline. And by the time I'm like halfway through, I'm like, it's only been a week and I'm almost done with the book. I don't think I need an outline at this point. And I didn't. So those two are pretty easy. My horror is something I also really, really love. It's more sci-fi. And probably because that just takes so much research. So I was reading a lot of like scientific journals and things about things that I find deeply interesting, and then asking how can I work these things into the fiction, or how would they apply to say these aspects of string theory, which kind of was important to the science behind how this monster accessed our dimension. So that wasn't maybe as easy to write, but it really kind of got me deep in my soul.
There's something to be said about game or about books and shifting from genre to genre. And I was always kind of curious, from your perspective, do you think the format of different genres changes based on the genre, the way you're telling the story in a horror, say, suggested versus a high fantasy?
Yeah, I think so. And the way that is probably the biggest way I think that we see that is in film and videos and things that I have seen and been inspired by. And sometimes the storytelling technique, I'll emulate that. For instance, in my horror series, in the first one, and this would be the Shadowless series. And if you buy the box sets cheapest, if you bought it in paperback, you have, that's a collection of all three. I didn't release them as individual paperbacks. And in the first one, you've got the story where we're already in the apocalypse. And then in the second book, the whole thing is a flashback and it happens before the first book. And so we're getting kind of this jump back, and now we're establishing. So it's this mystery component where you're trying to figure out what it was. And then we're slowly getting the answers through part two. And then in part three, we're resolving a lot of those questions and seeing how they impact, as well as ramping up the intensity because the creature is now inside the facility.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Then my fantasy is maybe kind of your standard like fantasy fare. Like the Espa series feels very much like the D&D movie, which was great. If you've not seen it, go out, push pause, go out and watch it. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was great. I hope they do another one. I don't think they're going to, but I hope they do a sequel.
They need to.
And the prequel books, the books that lead up to it, were really good as well. So
yeah, I've seen those. I was almost surprised that they did it, knowing that people were like, there was such turmoil. But honestly, Hasbro asked for all the problems that they had. If you don't want to get mauled, don't poke the bear. gamer fans are, not only are gamer fans rabid about their following, they give the companies so much money. Like people who play D&D, they've got a lot invested between minis, between books, between all the stuff that dice. They buy to have, yeah, dice to have, like, I don't know, people will buy a specific dice set for the character that they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like that. And that's that character's dice. And if he dies, we retire the set of dice. I'm like, these people are, they are saints. They have supported you in your game with their hard earned money. And when you go out and you say what we need is to squeeze them for more, that's it. You've just told your whole fan base, we're not on the same page.
Yeah.
You're a customer to us, not a fellow adventurer. And so the open game license debate, I don't have any sympathy for Hasbro, but I hope they get their act together, because I do want to see more amazing content.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You've got some upcoming events, other conventions, things you're going to be on. You're going to be on another podcast later tonight. Tell us about all the things. Where are you going to be? Where can we find you?
Oh, let me see here. I'll give you my next through April. We're in middle of March. I'll be in Des Moines at a mall show. I think Merle Hay Mall, March 23 and 4. I'm going to be in Omaha at KanapiCon. I haven't done an anime show in a while. Then I'm going to be right just down the road at University of Northern Iowa. The Rod Library, is hosting something every year. They call RodCon, April 6th. It's a one-day show. I'm going to be there. And that's, I own, and if you need a place to stay, look up the Weiss Mansion. That's a bed and breakfast. We do like murder mysteries and all kinds of fun stuff. We are an Air D&D. Bring your gaming group over. It'd be a good time. Nice. So that's just down the road, which is nice, because I travel all the time, and I secretly don't like travel. It's I would rather be riding than behind the wheel. Like, I'm just trying to stay alive. But I do. I usually don't die. There'll be April 13 and 14. I'll be in St. Cloud at their mall, another of those mall shows. Running a murder mystery April 20. That'll be here at the mansion. And then it'll be a C2E2, April 26th through the 28th. It's a big show. Come and find me. I know I had a lot of people last year that were looking for me at C2E2. I was there. I think my stall, my booth was like in the last stall in the bathroom, and they just shut it and locked it. it was probably the worst possible place you could have put me, and I was not happy about it. I had a lot of fans. I had probably... a lot, but you know, I like 6 or 8 of you guys reached out an email or like, I was there, I could not find you, I was miffed. They had like actually closed the aisle, had blocked it off with like silence. It was wow. Layers and layers of bad. I complained and they said, you know what we're gonna do about it?
Nothing.
So
I knew that's what you were gonna say.
Also, you want to come back? Okay, you're on the wait list. Even when you're like a mid-lister, you're still a nobody. So when I say nobody's here looking for you, even when they are, that really is the case. It's just you got to do something. Like, if you can really, you can be known to con staff in a few different ways. Most of them will also send you to jail. So I guess just put in the hard work, show up every year, keep doing the thing that got you where you are, and grow slow, I guess. After C2E2, here's the highlights, big shows. Let me see. I'll be a guest at Origins this year. Again, I was a literary guest there last year. It was awesome. That's going to be June 19 through the 23, Columbus. Come and find me in the author alley. I'll be down there. I'll also be leading some panels on a few different things. Those shows haven't confirmed me, so I'm not going to tell you about them, but I will be at Gen Con as well. That's August 1 through 4 in Indianapolis. I think the week before that, I believe I'm doing Anime Iowa, which is awesome. I'm at several Renaissance festivals as well in Iowa, so come find me. I do the Medieval Bookmobile. I've got a legitimate, like, Gypsy Bardo that I sell books out of. It's pretty cool. Nice. August, Fan Expo Chicago. I'll be back. I'll be at Mad X in Madison in September, SuperCon in September in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
I'll be there for that.
Oh, nice. Yes. It's a fantastic show. It's every year, it's better. They don't jump way up the ladder, just the next rung. We're just going to do it a little better every year because sustained growth is better than a big jump, because otherwise you get big jump problems. And I think that's why they're so consistently good at what they do. And I recommend that. If you're like, you recommend a show in South Dakota? I'm like, listen, if you've not been to it, you're missing out. Get there. It's good. And then Gabe Hole Con, Twin Cities Con. Gabe Hole is fantastic. I'll be there. Actually, a whole, me and some author friends, we're taking over the whole wall in the back. We're doing the Wall of Authors. I'm a part of that group. Come and say hi, and we'll do some panels there too.
Awesome. That's great. I look forward to seeing you at some of these. I'm going to be at some of those events as well, for sure. The 605 one in Sioux Falls. I'm hoping to get to Gen Con. I'm hoping to get to Game Hole Con. I'm in the Twin Cities, so hopefully I can get to Twin Cities Con. So
is the 605 a two-day show this year?
I believe so. I believe it's Saturday.
I did it last year, and it was a one-day, and I saw they were stepping up the game, which I like. I believe I'm double booked that weekend, so I'm doing something because it's close enough to SuperCon. I'm like, I don't want to wear out my welcome.
Well, hopefully we'll see you there when you are there, when I get to see you. people can catch your website, author Christopher D. Schmitz. You're on Facebook, /author Christopher D. Schmitz. On X at Cylon Bagpiper. I love it. And TikTok at author Christopher D. Schmitz as well. People can find you at all those locations.
Actually, no D on the TikTok.
It's, no D on the TikTok? I could have sworn I saw D.
One okay. Too many letters for them to let really? Me keep my consistency. So just author Christopher Schmitz.
See, I'm glad you corrected me with that then. Glad I was in it with that. I was writing them all down. I'm like, okay, there it is. Yep, it's there. Okay, is it the same? Yep, it's the whole thing. Nope, missing the D. Got it.
So close.
So close, but yet so far. So go and check out all of those things, guys. Go and follow. Check out all of the books. Find one that you like. And then once you find one that you like, you're going to like them all. So go in there and go down the rabbit hole. The Christopher D. Schmitz rabbit hole, as it were. Although coming up, everybody that's listening, please join us for Deborah Wild. I've been told specifically there's like it's pronounced Deborah Wild is a former screenwriter and author of a handful of paranormal and urban fantasy books. We're going to talk with her March 25th live, or you can listen to the podcast on the 26th. Also coming up the Monday after WrestleMania, we're going to be joined by former Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion and co-host of the paranormal show Darkness Radio. The Beer City Bruiser is going to be joining us, and not to mention we're still going to have our good friend Ed Greenwood is going to be returning to the show as well. So please make sure to follow us, rate, review, click all those buttons. It helps us and helps our guests. So for Christopher D. Schmitz, I am Nick, and thank you for listening to Epic Realms.
Well, there you are. I hope you enjoyed yourselves, and I do hope that you come back and join us again for Epic Realms.